And welcome to our online edition of Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with you. David Dow is a death penalty attorney and the Cullen Professor at the University of Houston Law Center and a visiting professor of history at Rice University. 14 years ago, he founded the Texas Innocence Network to assist wrongfully convicted inmates establish their innocence. He's the author of several books, including the autobiography of an execution. His latest work is Things I've Learned from Dying, a book about life. And we continue our conversation with David Dow, who joins us from Houston. Hello, David.
Hello, Bonnie.
Thank you again for joining us and for taking this extra time.
You're very welcome. I'm happy to get the chance to talk to you all a little bit more.
Well, when we left off yesterday, you were talking about why you continue to do this work, and what coming up for me was the immeasurable empathy that pervades your life and your work. And I started thinking about your clients, and then I started thinking about people who are opposed to the death penalty. Do you think that your clients are lacking it when they commit their crimes? Is that what's the most operative factor, would you say? Or one of them?
I think that that is certainly a factor. I think that there is very little question but that most of my clients and most people who commit homicide, whether they end up on death row or don't, lack a certain type of empathy. I think that's unquestionably true. I think that that is, relatively speaking, a minor characteristic that goes into the mix of characteristics that make it possible for murderers to commit murder. I think that the other factors include things like not understanding consequences. In many ways, I think that people who commit murder are people who haven't really even thought about what it means to commit a violent act like that. There are people who haven't thought about what it means to cause that type of injury to others. And so it's not simply that they lack empathy, although I think many of them do. I think that it's that they don't think about the sort of questions that require one to exercise one's capacity for empathy.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. They just don't even think about it. You know, you said that you weren't attached emotionally to those you were representing when you started out. What changed for you that you started growing more attached to your clients?
I think that I simply relaxed what, in retrospect, was a defense mechanism. One of the things that you know as a death penalty lawyer from the time that you become a death penalty lawyer, at least if you become a death penalty lawyer just about anywhere except for California, where they don't execute very many people, is that your clients are going to be executed and that you are going to have to deal with the fact that your clients are executed. And the easiest way to make that easy is to have some emotional distance between yourself and your client. And I think that was a big part of why it is that I, in the early part of my career, kept some distance between my clients and myself, because I, at some level, understood that although I might keep them alive for a long time, certainly a lot longer than they would have been kept alive if they hadn't been represented, at the end of my representation, there was going to be an execution rather than a movement of a prisoner from death row to the general prison population. And the less close you are to your client, the less traumatic that failure is. And so I think what happened to me is simply that I relaxed that defense mechanism. I don't really know why it is that I relaxed it. The next question you ask me is, why did you do it? I'm not going to have an answer to that. I don't really know, other than that I think that getting to know my clients' families in particular caused that shield, if you can call it that, that I had put up to erode a bit. I would get to know all the people who loved my clients, their moms, their dads, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, wives, or partners. And it's hard to keep emotional distance from somebody when you're forming relationships with all of the people who have emotional closeness to that person.
Well, the question I will ask is, now that you've let down that defense and you do get more attached and involved, how are you able to detach? Or are you?
I don't think that I am able to detach, to be honest. I think that I have a pretty close relationship with a lot of my clients, not as close as some of the younger lawyers who work for me have, but I have a pretty close relationship with a whole bunch of my clients, and that makes it harder for me in a lot of ways now when my clients get executed than it was when I first started doing the work. One would expect, I suppose, almost the opposite, that the more clients you have, the easier it gets, or at least the less hard it gets. And in my case, perversely, it's almost the opposite, because as I've lasted in this career, I've become more empathetic, and I've gotten closer to my clients. And so I think that it's harder on me now than it was on me 20 years ago, when I ultimately lose a client.
Well, it sounds like it would be very difficult now.
It is. I think that, as I've suggested, I suppose, in this book, and I think that I suggested more directly in my last book, The Autobiography of an Execution, I think that I am somebody who really leans on his family to ease that pain and ease that burden. One of the things that continues, I think, to amaze me, I'm not sure amaze is the right word, but it's one of the things that I find striking, is how many young death penalty lawyers there are who don't have families yet. They start working as death penalty lawyers when they're fresh out of school. And to me, the hardest possible thing to do is to go home to an empty house at the end of a night after your client has been executed. And so I don't have any question but that, even though I am closer to my clients now than I was 20 years ago, I also have a support network now that I didn't have when I was a young single man doing this work.
It always comes back to how amazing it is that you continue to do this work. But in our interview yesterday, I wasn't surprised exactly, but I was appalled when you said that those who end up on death row have it has everything to do with their race and their socioeconomic status. Do you have any hopes that our criminal justice system will change and become more just?
Sure. I think that it will unquestionably change and become more just, if what we mean by that is that it will become less racist. I think that our country and our criminal justice system is less racist today than it was 20 years ago, and 20 years ago it was less racist than it was 50 years before that. But if you're a lawyer who cares about equality, the fact that something is getting better isn't enough to save it if it's still violating this value of equality, and our criminal justice system still violates the value of equality. And I do believe that that gets less pronounced as each day passes, and that in a generation or maybe two, the criminal justice system won't be significantly racist, because our society won't be significantly racist anymore. At least that's what I hope. But I'll tell you what won't change. What won't change is the sense in which it remains very heavily tilted against people who have less wealth than people who have more. You have to remember that what a criminal trial is, what a criminal case is the state against some individual. It's the state of Texas against my client, or the United States of America against some client, or the state of Florida against some client. And the United States and the state of Florida and the state of Texas don't have an infinite bank account, but they have a vastly larger bank account than the bank accounts of the typical people who are facing prosecution in courtrooms that are run by those governments. And so the playing field is exceedingly tilted towards the state. Now, if one is very, very wealthy, just think about the O.J. Simpson trial, for example. If one is very, very wealthy, then one can come close to equalizing the playing field. You're not going to actually equalize it, no matter how wealthy you are, unless you're maybe somebody who's as wealthy as Warren Buffett or Bill Gates, but you very rarely see people with that kind of wealth who are being tried in criminal proceedings, at least outside of Wall Street.
Right.
And you have a chance to equalize the playing field if you have that kind of wealth. But people who are committing murders, people who are on death row, are not people who have that kind of wealth. And so it is a terribly, terribly slanted playing field. And I don't have any expectation that that will ever change.
What about capital punishment? Do you think that will ever be abolished, or is the movement too strong to keep it in place?
Capital punishment will disappear. And I used to be sure that it was going to disappear in my lifetime. I'm still pretty confident of that, but I'm absolutely positive it will disappear in my son's lifetime. He's 13 years old right now. And the reason it's going to disappear is just because it doesn't make any economic sense. It is, as I think I mentioned yesterday, an extravagant waste of social resources. In the United States every year, there are something like 15,000 homicides. 15,000 homicides. In a really, really busy year in the state execution chambers, if you add up all the executions that occur in every state in the U.S., you might have 100 executions. That's a busy year. So on the one hand, you have 15,000 homicides. On the other hand, you have 100 executions. There's no one who can think that the death penalty deters crime, because if you're thinking about killing somebody and you look at the data and you say there are 15,000 homicides and only 100 people get executed, there isn't any rational person who would be deterred from committing murder by those statistics. So why do we do it? Well, we do it not because there's any reason to think that it deters, but just because there's this impulse that some states have to execute certain murderers. And I think that that impulse is one that states are willing to indulge until the taxpayers realize what the price that they're paying for that indulgence happens to be. So I'll just give you a couple of quick numbers. Some students of mine and I collected a bunch of data over the last couple of years and concluded that a typical death penalty case in Texas costs about $3 million from start to finish. There are non-typical death penalty cases that cost two or three times that amount, but a typical case, about $3 million. It would cost $1 million to keep a murderer in prison for the rest of his life. So why are you spending the extra $2 million? You're not making society any safer. You're not deterring any additional criminals. And you've spent $2 million on this handful of murders for no apparent reason, and there are other uses that that money could have been put to. And so I think that we're going to do away with the death penalty just because the people will increasingly realize that you don't need it to make society safe. And because you don't need it to make society safe, the additional amount of money that you spend pursuing those cases as death penalty cases can't be justified.
Well, I guess I just have one final question. You said yesterday you thought you knew everything you had learned, or you thought you had learned everything there was to know about dying, but that you have learned other things. Could you tell us what they are? You who faces so much death and is confronted with so much death in your life.
Yes. Well, I don't want to tell you all of them because then nobody will read the book. I do want people to read the book.
Okay.
I'll tell you what I think are the two most significant things that I learned and that I wanted to write about and that I did write about. One of them has to do with the opportunity to get second chances, the opportunity to make mistakes and learn from them and change our lives so that we don't make them again. And there are some people who get that opportunity, and there are some people who don't. And I think that when we have that opportunity, we need to understand and appreciate how lucky we are to have that opportunity. The second thing that really forms, I think, the central thread that connects the three different stories that I write about is this idea that human relationships are these organic things that have beginnings and middles and ends. And the thing about a human relationship is that it can have a natural end, which means that the relationship is complete, or it can end before it's really complete. I think of it as getting up and walking out of a movie when there are 15 minutes of it left. And when you get up and walk out of a movie 15 minutes before it ends, you've had this incomplete experience. And I think that there's something similar that can happen with relationships. And the reason that my father-in-law was willing to accept death is because he felt like his relationships were complete. And conversely, the reason that my client wanted to stay alive is because he felt like his relationships weren't. And the reason, finally, that I feel like I failed my son in the ordeal that our dog went through was because I made the mistake of not giving him the opportunity to complete his relationship with our dog, an opportunity that my wife and I had because we were there when she died. And I think that that idea of the importance of completing relationships is something that I didn't know before I started thinking about this book, and that as I was writing it and as I was thinking about the way these three different stories connected with one another, that was perhaps the single most important thing that I observed, that we all have these relationships, but we don't think about whether they are complete or not, and that it's important to think about whether they are so that if they aren't, we can complete them because they might end at any time. And when they do end, it's important that we feel like even though they ended and even though they didn't last as long as we wish they had, that they had nevertheless been complete human relationships.
What a lesson to take away. Well, David Dow, I really want to thank you for spending this extra time with us on our online edition of Topical Currents. David Dow is a death penalty attorney, Cullen Professor of University at the University of Houston Law Center, visiting professor of history at Rice University, and the founder of the Texas Innocence Network. His latest book is Things I've Learned from Dying, a book about life. And the website is TexasInnocenceNetwork.com. David Dow, thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome, Bonnie. The pleasure has been mine.
We want to thank David Dow for joining us, and thanks to our online producer and technical director, Paul Leary. For Topical Currents, I'm Bonnie Berman.